The following is the audio version of a video released at peakprosperity.com. Visit peakprosperity.com to watch the video and to find other insightful content such as articles, discussion forums, and exclusive subscriber-only content.
The world is already in the midst of the largest energy shock in all of human history. It's going to have extraordinary demands and challenges, if not disruptions, if not even catastrophes here and there, depending on how long the Iran war continues, but the United States is adding fuel to that fire and doing something to itself that is absolutely astonishing. I can't wait to show this to you. Hello, everyone. I am Dr. Chris Martinson, founder of PeakProsperity.com, creator of The Crash Course, which is the viral video series and also best-selling book that connects energy, the economy, and the environment into one system's view. It's really important. Now, listen, I've been studying energy and its relationship to the economy for over 25 years, and I'm going to share that with you today. And it's something of a superpower for those who've taken the time to get it. I'm your information scout. I separate fact from fiction. I'm going to bring you actionable information that you really can't afford to live without. And we're going to start here with this. Today, we're talking about data centers and liquefied natural gas demands now on our natural gas supply here in the United States. And you know what? The math isn't mathing in this story. So I want to start with this extraordinary exchange here that happened on the Tucker Carlson show recently. He's talking with Kevin O'Leary, and Kevin O'Leary is the main proponent of this massive data center called Stratos that's going to be going in Utah, as they've proposed it. And it's going to be a 9-gigawatt data center. Here's Tucker asking what needs to be asked.
Go wherever the energy is, but I thought you were you're bringing your own energy to the project. Can you explain how you're going to power this?
Sure, that's a good question. You can't tap in, and you can't, you know, you tap into somebody's grid. Let's take a place like Texas or in Mississippi or Utah, for that matter, where I am. The electrical bills in that county are going to go up 30%. And that's what pissed off so many people in Virginia. They went out of their minds as the electrical bills kept going up. So you can't do that. You have to bring your own power. So the way you do that is you find low-cost stranded natural gas. You acquire the new technology turbines that burn very, very clean and require a lot less water, because that's a big debate too. And in some cases, no water. They're air-cooled. And you build those turbines first. So basically, the data center game is about power. Now, here's another reason the Chinese would not want, forget about data centers. Let's just say we're building new gas turbines that make electricity. The Chinese don't want you to do that either, because they know that that's how you're going to solve the grid problem. You know, the people in Utah are telling me, look, is there any way when you build these power facilities for the data centers, you could sell back some of that power to our local grid? And the answer is yes. So now, instead of being the evil data center guys, we can be the guys that are actually powering the Utah grid, which, by the way, taps into the national grid. So we want to build as many of these power generators before we build any data centers.
But so where does the gas come from in this the world?
All right, Tucker's asking the most important question. Where does the gas come from? But look at this spin, right? Kevin O'Leary's like, oh, not only are we not going to be a drain on anything, we're going to be adding to the grid, as if the most efficient way to generate electricity and put it back into the grid is to just build your own gas generators. And he used the term stranded natural gas, meaning, oh, there's just this natural gas. It's somewhere, but nobody can use it. So we're actually doing the world a favor. We're going to use that natural gas, and we're going to, you know, maybe feed some of that back to the grid. Listen, if you could make money doing that, people would be doing that. When you build a natural gas power plant, you have to have that thing really tapped into the grid. You don't just sort of feed energy back in. Those gas plants have to be integrated with the grid. So there are dispatchable loads. They have to keep the cycles of the 60 hertz cycle, you know, perfect. There's all kinds of things. You don't just sort of feed energy back into the grid at that scale. So he's just making stuff up here. But Tucker now just asked, well, where's that gas coming from?
The world's largest data center, the one you're planning in Utah.
Well, mine won't be the largest for years. That's another piece of misinformation being spewed everywhere. And I'm going to tell you who's doing it soon. We're going to build 1.5 gigawatts first, so a fraction of the 9 gig proposed, and make sure everything works. And the people there in Box Elder County can come and inspect it and see the air quality EPA standards we're going to hold up to, the water rights permits that we're going to maintain and be compliant with, the noise EPA requirements.
Answer the question, Kevin.
The air quality we have to be compliant with. Get the first one up, a small fraction of it, and show everybody how it works. That's the plan. And then I didn't need 40,000 acres, but that was the parcel available. That's twice the size of Manhattan. It's called the MIDA designation.
Where's the gas going to come from, Kevin?
Right beside the Hill Air Force Base.
It's at least three times bigger than Manhattan. Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah, but I don't need all that, but that was what was available. I'm going to lease it back to grazers, do some manufacturing maybe. There's plenty of land. We don't need it all.
But the power for it, where does that come from?
So what we do is there's the Ruby pipeline there. It's only 17% utilized. It's one of the most underutilized pipelines in America. So it's not like we're – so we buy gas from the Ruby pipeline, and we put it into a clean generator, and it generates electricity. And we tie
– Oh, okay. Well, that was about 3 minutes of not answering the question. It's like, dude, where's the power coming from? So it's coming from gas. It's coming from a gas pipeline. So obviously at this scale, right? So this Stratos is the name of this 9 gigawatt proposed center, which eventually will get built out if they go according to plan. And by the way, this thing is going to consume twice as much electricity as the entire state of Utah currently consumes. And Kevin's trying to spin it saying, oh, we're using stranded gas, 17% of a pipeline. We'll feed energy back in. We'll be making energy for the state, not taking it. You decide if you think those things are really true, but that's a lot of Wall Street spin. You got it. Okay, you can clearly hear him trying to like get the spin out because we're at the spin stage of the story. But let's get down to the facts. That's who I am. That's what I do. We're going to have to get down. Let me reach down here and get this. You know what, Kevin? Going to have to break out my data paddle because that's what we do here at Peak Prosperity. Okay, so let's go there.
So you said you...
The Ruby pipeline. So first off, here's a rule of thumb. For every gigawatt that you are going to be putting in as a data center, it consumes, that data center is going to be consuming about 0.15 billion cubic feet per day of natural gas, or 150 million cubic feet of natural gas per day in order to fund that thing. So, well, let's see what we got here. For the 9 gigawatt Stratos Wonder Valley project over here, that's going to be about 1.35 billion cubic feet per day. Could be higher, could be lower. It could be higher than that. It depends on which type of technology they're using. So there's different types of gas turbines you can use. And a very, 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 very efficient one might use 1.4 billion cubic feet per day. A really inefficient one might be using 2.16. That's somewhere in here. But let's take the lowest at 1.4, okay? Now... He says, well, we're only going to use 17% of this Ruby pipeline. It's only 17% utilized. We're just going to tap into that. We're going to help them utilize it more efficiently. Sounds great. The spare physical capacity in the Ruby pipeline is 1.245 billion cubic feet. Let's call it 1.3. That's how much spare physical capacity there's. They're actually going to take up at least all of that and then some. So whoever's already, like they're proposing to tap into this pipeline and take more than 100% of its actual capacity, which means somebody else is going to lose out in this story. And you know who that's going to be in this story, because we've seen this written large already, right? The people in Tahoe. Oh, we're so sorry. You're going to have to find another source of your electricity. Ours is now going to data centers. People whose electricity prices, which Kevin very dismissively said, oh, you know, people got a little cranky about their electricity bills going up 30%. Hey, in Jersey, they went up 200%, Kevin. People get a little cranky about that because it turns out people are being asked to subsidize your data centers. And they're always a little vague on why we need these data centers in the first place. What are they? They kind of lazily wave at this idea that, oh, but China, you know, we got to get there before China does. Where's there, right? Oh, it's this thing. We can't define it, but we'll know it when we get there. We'll get there before China. So that's the story. But he was being like, I think Tucker needed to have access to this information because it's like, Kevin, you're talking about more than 100% of that particular pipeline. But wait, it gets worse from there. So let's carry on. It turns out that First, you take the natural gas and you put it into your combined cycle turbine, and it burns it and it creates heat. So he was saying, oh, these are going to be air cooled. So they're just going to dump the heat from burning the natural gas to make the electricity in the first place. That goes into the air. The second thing is that electricity goes into the chips, and then the chips have to be cooled because they're also taking that electricity and turning it into heat. Get this. It turns out the real shock about this data center comes from waste heat. Where's it go? It doesn't just disappear. According to Utah State University physics professor Robert Davies, the facility would generate an additional 7 to 8 gigawatts of heat, creating a total thermal output of roughly 16 gigawatts concentrated heat in one location. So he says it's comparable to detonating 23 atomic bombs a day in the Hunsai Valley, a high desert basin near the shrinking Great Salt Lake that naturally traps heat like a bowl. The project's energy footprint would also be roughly equal to that of 40,000 Walmart supercenters. Local temperatures could easily rise by 5 degrees Fahrenheit during the day and a staggering 28 degrees Fahrenheit at night. That's an ecological disaster. So Kevin mentioned all these. Oh, we have to do all these studies, the noise, the sound. Kevin, we might want to take a look at the waste heat, too, because that's a thing. So what are these data centers really? I think they're gigantic toasters that don't make toast. All right. That's all they really are. They take our energy, our precious energy molecules, and they convert them into waste heat. And also really cool pictures like this one, which I generated on Grok. That's what we get out of our data centers. I'm going to follow up on that in just a minute. Okay. Now, Trump, the U.S. Department of Energy, headed up by Chris Wright, says that, they're expecting now LNG, liquefied natural gas exports, are expected to double from the United States by the end of the decade. So that's by 2030. And they trumpet this like this is a good thing. But is it? Okay. That means LNG exports would have to go from 18 billion cubic feet a day to about 36 billion cubic feet a day in just 3.5 years. So first question, where are we going to get 18 billion cubic extra feet per day of natural gas? And this is just LNG exports. I'll combine this all back with the data centers in just a second. Now, here we are looking at a chart from the Energy Information Administration of the United States. That's the EIA. And here we're looking at the monthly U.S. dry shale natural gas production by formation. So where does our natural gas come from? It mostly comes out of shale plays right now. And they have names like the Permian Basin, the Haynesville play, the Marcellus, Utica, Eagle Ford, Bakken, all of this stuff. Now, this is the Permian here in this blue on top. This is the Haynesville here in this next bluish color. This is the Marcellus here. So the first thing we might notice is actually that all of these plays from the Utica on down, which is from here on down, I've put the purple parens bracket around those. They didn't stack well. So this big thing is these. Since 2019, all of these plays in purple combined, since 2019, they've actually lost 0.22 billion cubic feet per day. So they're actually shrinking. There's not more coming out of them. And I thought 2019 gives us a good long time. It takes us right before the COVID shock, which would be an artificial place to measure from. So from 2019 to today, what do we got? 7 years of data. Well, 6.5. And what we find out is that the majority of the plays, which aren't the majority of the output, but by name, the majority of the plays are shrinking. So now we're left with these other ones right here. And so let's take a quick peek. So from 2019 to today, the Permian has increased its production by 14 billion cubic feet per day. So that's about 1.9 billion cubic feet per day per year. Does that make sense? So over those 6.5 years, it's increased its output by 14.5 billion cubic feet per day. So if the next 6 years look like these 6 years, or the next 3.5 years look like the last 3.5 years, we're going to expect about 1.9 billion cubic feet per day to come out of the Permian more over the next 3.5 years than we would to now. That's good. That'd be more supply. That would be awesome. The next one is the Haynesville, and it's actually only increased by about 0.8 billion cubic feet per day per year. So we're now up to 2.7. And the last one is the Marcellus, coming in at about 0.7. So we're up to about 3.4 billion cubic feet per day per year is coming out of those three plays. That's what we got. That's what the data says. That's where we're at. Okay. Problem now is that the math isn't mathing. Said we'd get here very quickly. First, all U.S. natural gas growth has been averaging about 2.81 average yearly growth over the past 5 years. That includes the pluses from those top three plays, right? The Permian, the Marcellus, and the Haynesville. But all the rest of them have been shrinking. You average it all out, we've been averaging about 2.8 billion cubic feet per day per year. Okay. So if the growth is the same for the next 3.5 years, 3.5 times 2.81 gives us 9.85. Let's call it 10. Let's round up. 10 billion cubic feet per day. That's cool. We're going to get more natural gas out of the ground, right? Awesome. Problem. We just heard from the Trump administration. They're planning to double exports. So that's 18 billion cubic feet per day, which we can all see is larger than 10 all by itself. Next, we might say that data centers are going to add another 4 to 6 billion cubic feet per day of demand by 2030. Depends on how fast these projects get done. So let's just call it 4, 22 billion cubic feet per day compared to 10. Already, you can see the problems starting to mount. Industry is going to put another 1 to 2 billion cubic feet per day by 2030 because we've got companies moving here from Germany, say BASF is an example, moving here to take advantage of our abundant low gas prices. And so we add it all up. We get like maybe 24 billion cubic feet per day of additional demand by 2030, but we only have 10. There's the problem right there. We're going to be putting more demand on our natural resource than we have resource at this point in time. So let's take a long view at this, though. Let's take a long view. How much could we get out of the ground? So good news. These are really big numbers, right? We have two things we have to talk about: reserves and resources. Two separate words. I know they sound a lot alike. They both begin with, you know, R-E-S. So a reserve is actually proved. It's in the ground. We're actually already producing it. People have got pipes in there, and we know how much is in there. And so this is the stuff we can count on. And it sounds like a lot because there's 584 trillion, that's what the T is, trillion cubic feet of proved gas reserves. Oh, my God. That's wow. We don't have to worry about this, Chris, for ever. Sounds like a lot, right? Hang on. We're going to keep doing what we do here and use the data and get to the math. Here's the long view as well for resources. Now, these are things that are, they say here, undiscovered. We think they're there, technically recoverable, but, you know, we haven't quite figured out how to unlock them yet, but maybe technology will get there eventually. So these are resources, kind of like reserves are solid. Resources, a little more speculative. There might be more there than we think. There might be less. We don't know. But essentially on federal lands, they're expecting about 391 trillion cubic feet of technically recoverable natural gas. Another in the Permian Basin, another maybe 28 trillion cubic feet undiscovered, technically recoverable gas. In the Phosphoria system in southwest Wyoming, northwest Colorado, where that Ruby pipeline is going to be tapping, maybe 666 billion cubic feet of gas. Sounds like a lot. Added up, 420 trillion cubic feet of resources. Why does this matter? Because when you look at how much we're taking out of the ground on a yearly basis, the United States is pulling out 48 trillion cubic feet of natural gas. They call it withdrawals in EIA parlance in 2025. And by the way, we're going to notice it's climbing. I'll get to that in just a second. So let's math it up. If we take those 584 trillion cubic feet of proved reserves and we divide it by 48 trillion cubic feet of withdrawals, that's 12.6 years. That's how much is left if we could pull it out of the ground that fast. We can't, but this is going to create a supply-demand mismatch in the future. It's going to be pretty astonishing. All right, but what about those resources? We'll get to them. It's going to be amazing. Well, there the math is, if we took those and divided those by 48 trillion cubic feet, it's about 8.75 years. But problem is, we're not going to be burning the same amount of natural gas. We're going to be burning more and more and more of it. So those 48 trillion cubic feet is what's called at current rates of consumption. Rates of consumption never stay current. They always advance. So if we just put a simple black dotted line on that EIA chart and we advance it out to 2030 and we draw a line over from there, we find out that we're going to be pulling down 54 trillion cubic feet per year out there in 2030, which means then the reserves last 10.8 years, The resources last 7.8 years. If you could pull them all out of the ground at that rate of 54 TCF per year, but you can't. So we're going to start running into a situation where our demands on natural gas and our ability to get it out of the ground, those two things collide, and that's when you get into big trouble. I wish it was only that bad. This all gets a whole lot worse when you look at the pell-mell rush of these data centers and how fast they're going in, and just these absolutely disconnected from physical reality, bizarre statements that we get from the Silicon Valley tech bros who are leading us all down this data center path. They don't care if your electricity costs spike, you know, it's an annoyance to somebody like Kevin O'Leary. They don't even know where the power comes from. Like, it comes out of a pipeline. We'll just, it's unused. We'll tap into it. They don't understand any of the math I just mathed for you. They're not looking at any of this. They're looking at something entirely different. So let's listen in to the CEO of NVIDIA, Jensen Huang, and here's what he says.
I've been over the last half decade helping people understand the amount of compute that's likely to be coming. And I just told you guys something about how I reasoned through how much energy is going to be necessary. The amount of energy that we need for compute, for computing, is likely, probably 1,000 times more than we currently have.
What? 1,000 times more? He's just like, oh, yeah. Well, and it'll just happen because you know, we just will these things into existence. The disconnect in that statement, just without everybody just choking like I just did, is astonishing to me, because we don't have 1,000 times more. But let's keep listening.
And that's an enormous amount of energy. However, the way to think about that is, in the future, computers are going to be two things.
Oh, good. He's going to explain to us in a very easy to understand way why this is a good thing. Let's listen in. This is really good.
It's always going to be generated, because it's intelligent, it's contextually aware. So it's going to be generated. And the number two is going to be continuous. And so you've got this generative computing in a continuous way, compared to pre-recorded retrieval-based computing that is only initiated on, you know, per use. The question is, how do you think about the amount of energy necessary for that? So I think if you say we need it 1,000 times, I wouldn't be surprised if we're off by a couple of orders of magnitude. And so we need a lot more compute. We need a lot more energy. And so
he says this like it's a good thing. Hey, instead of having this thing where we just store the data and we retrieve it, we're going to be continuously generating it. So you can't ever turn these machines off. There's no such thing as like a 1 hour brownout or blackout to a data center. 24/7, 365, 99.99% uptimes. They just have to be fed all the time. Again, these are giant toaster ovens that don't make toast. And so I was like, why would we do that as a nation, as a species? Why would we do that? What is the compelling reason that we're going to, at this moment of world history, where we have the largest energy shock ever unfolding, say, you know, I think we should throw about 1,000 times more? Rough ballpark. I could be off by an order of magnitude or two, but 1,000 times more, you know? Even if he's off by two orders of magnitude, 10x more is not a doable proposition. 100x, not doable, right? 1,000x, impossible. Maybe technology will change. But anyway, just to show you the mindset of these people, Kevin O'Leary and Jensen Huang together are just like, oh, we can just shrug and ignore energy. You can't. That's why I do what I do. I'm going to ground us all in reality, and we're going to have to talk realistically about what is possible and what's not possible, and we're going to have to carry that conversation on a little bit further. I mean, is this really the highest and best use of a limited and extremely valuable resource? Natural gas is limited. I know there's a lot of it, but it's not unlimited. And look what we're doing with it. We are producing LNG, which, by the way, to take the gas out of the ground, and it's a gas, and turn it into a liquid, takes an extraordinary amount of energy. So we waste some of the energy of this natural gas that comes out of the ground as a usable molecule, and we squish it into LNG, simply so that, because a liquid occupies 800 times less volume or whatever the number is, and so we can ship it more easily. So there's already energy that we could take that natural gas out of the ground and use it for things here in this country. We could build bridges with it. We could fertilize fields with it. We could build a high-speed rail. We could do things. But we're going to take some of that energy and we're going to just waste it, turning it into a liquid so that we can send it to places like Europe. And I'm not even sure Europe even likes us all that much. So I'm not sure what the urgency is to figure out how we can send hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of billions of cubic feet per month overseas, right? So these are, you see here, 200, 400 billion cubic feet coming out of LNG. And here, these, each one of these bars is a month. So in this month, coming into 2026, looks like we're sending 500 billion cubic feet in that month overseas, most of it to Europe, some to Asia, a little bit to Latin America, and some to Africa. But is this the highest and best use? Converting it into a gas, converting a gas into a liquid so that we can sell it for money, which, by the way, we print out of thin air. Like, really, is getting digits on a hard drive that represent dollars that important that we would take our absolutely unbelievably valuable stuff and ship it overseas? Or we just set it on fire in the desert and make video and make images like that. So there's that. And as well, I mean, is anybody thinking of the future? I don't think the White House is at this point, based on what I just saw there. Like, oh, we're going to double our LNG exports. Here we see the LNG exports currently as of when this was made here in late 2025, mid 2025. But all of these are new projects that are slated to come online. You got the Plaque Mines, the Corpus Christi Stage 3, which is already online. LNG Canada, Golden Pass, I think that's already fired up. So look at all these things. So this is going to take us from 15 BCF per day to close to 30. Actually, we'll get to 30 because just today, May 15th, they announced another 1.25 billion cubic feet per day demand. Katuras announces final investment decision for a 9.5 million tons per annum LNG export facility in Cameron, Louisiana, and is supposed to commence operations by 2030. So by 2030, we're going to have all kinds of demand, right? Again, LNG, data centers, industry, all of that, all of it competing against you and me for our dollars. So here's some predictions. The predictions are pretty simple at this point. One, I think the U.S. is just going to continue to export natural gas faster and faster and faster until it suddenly wakes up to the reality of resource limits and depletion and says, oh, awkwardly, we don't have all that much to send to the rest of the world, which means, sorry, rest of the world, the U.S. is then going to have to limit exports drastically, and it's going to ruin the LNG investments that just got excitedly announced and the energy security of Europe, sorry, Europe and elsewhere, right? And what this means is terrible for the world, for the world energy, but also all this is going to happen on or before 2030, right? It just will, based on the math I have. Now, if somebody has different math, I am totally open to seeing that other math, completely open to seeing that other math, but I haven't seen that math. Look, you know, something's very much not right in this story right now, right? Something's wrong. Like, simple math should be simple. It shouldn't be left up to guys like me to analyze this myself and tell you about it, right? Obviously, this should be part of our national dialogue, but it goes well beyond that, right? So we know now that we got markets are all in disarray and being manipulated. We got money is being printed out of thin air, politics, food, energy. Look, the list is long and it's getting longer every single day. Now, in my premium service, I spend dozens of hours every week searching through the noise, just like I showed you here, the noise of traditional and social media, right? All that stuff. I corroborate everything I possibly can. I disprove stories. I find the facts. Hey, so you don't have to. That's what I do. I spend my time to save you time. And I'll give you the unfiltered data, the hidden context, the clear analysis that you both need, and you deserve it to protect your family and your wealth, honestly. Not opinions. Facts like these I just went through, facts you can act on, delivered early so you can move from paralysis to decisive action. Yes, my service costs more than most. It's about $1,000 a year. But that's because I've been decades ahead of the biggest stories, just like this one. And I've spent my whole career distilling complex risks into the exact information you need, no more, no less, to take decisive actions. That's the important part. So, if you subscribe right now, you'll instantly unlock every premium report and video, as well as access to new premium content like the Fat Pipe, which I produce twice a week, the Wake Up Call twice a week, usually scouting reports like this one, which I typically release 3 more times a week, usually more. You'll join also a private community of thousands of sharp, like-minded people just like yourself and get immediate access to my critical alert service the moment something important breaks. So I'll send you to action if anything breaks and I notice it. So don't wait. The window to get ahead is closing, my friends. And remember, it didn't have to be this way. Plant a garden, please. Invest strategically and prudently, please. So until next time, I'm Chris Martinson of Peak Prosperity. Thank you for listening. Bye for now.